Today's gospel is a continuation from yesterday. In fact, the statement at the very beginning, someone of the guests at this Pharisee's dinner says, in response to what Jesus had just said, blessed is the one who will dine in the kingdom of God. So this is a reply to what Jesus had just said. What had Jesus just said? He said that when you have a dinner or a lunch, don't invite your friends and relatives. Invite the poor and the lame and the blind and the crippled. Now, when I was speaking about that parable or that strange instruction that we heard yesterday, I tried to point out that it's not simply about who we invite to our dinners, but it's a whole approach to life. It's a, you could say, a philosophy of life, to not put what you gain as the main motive for doing things, but to make a gift of yourself because God is the one taking care of you. So that's how we are to think. God is the one taking care of us, so therefore we can extend ourselves to care for others, especially those in the most greatest need. But I'm the one who kind of made it explicit that God is taking care of us or that God's in the picture. That didn't come out so clearly from the gospel itself. But in today's gospel, which is a continuation, it's much clearer that that's what Jesus is talking about, because after the man blurts out this business about dining in the kingdom, Jesus tells a parable which is more clearly about what God provides for us and how we respond. The parable is the man who gave a great dinner. Now, it's funny because I read this last night and all night and this morning, I was thinking that the invitation was to a wedding. But that's not what it says. It's just a great dinner. And the reason that idea popped into my head, and maybe you too, is that there's another story in Matthew's gospel, which is very similar, where the king puts on a wedding banquet for his son and invites many and they won't come. And that parable has a number of other elements to it. But this one is a great dinner. Let's just look at the surface of it. There's this invitation. Apparently the invitation goes out in advance. And then when the dinner's ready, there's this second invitation. Now is the time. So maybe 2 weeks ago, there was an announcement, there's going to be a great dinner, so get ready. I'm going to have a great dinner, and I want you to come to it. So they all knew. It wasn't like they were taken by surprise. And then when the dinner's ready, or when the date comes, then the servant goes out and says, okay, now the dinner's ready, come. Perhaps if we were living in that culture, this would make a lot of sense to us. I'm not sure what it would be like. We tend to think of a great dinner as an event to celebrate something, usually a wedding or an anniversary or a birthday or a promotion or something. But why is he having a great dinner? It doesn't say. But what it does say is that those who are invited all excuse themselves. They basically say no. And the excuses are pretty lame. The first is the worst one. I have purchased a field. What does that have to do with it? I mean, that field isn't going anywhere. You don't have to do anything about it. And not only that, you already knew that this great dinner was going to take place. So it's clearly an excuse. Consider me excused. Well, yeah, the invited guest is basically saying, this field, meaning my interests are more important than your dinner. The second one is the five yoke of oxen. At least it's something alive. But still, there's not an urgent need to deal with the oxen, to go evaluate them. So it's also an excuse, a revelation of the invited guest's different set of priorities. And then the third one, I have just married a woman. Therefore, I cannot come. Well, why? What's the logic there? Just bring your wife with you. The guy would be happy. So there's no clear reason not to go to the great dinner. And the master of the house is in a rage when he finds out that everybody says no. Now, I said that's the surface of it. This is a very thinly veiled allusion to the prophets inviting the chosen people. Now remember, the Jews are the chosen people. They already know they're the chosen people. They know that God has a plan for them from the beginning, and the prophets keep reminding them of it. And when the Messiah finally arrives, to say no is something like saying no to this invitation. Well, then, if those who were originally invited, meaning the chosen people, don't come, well, who's supposed to come? The first category is those excluded, the poor, the lame, the blind, and the crippled. The very four categories that we heard yesterday are the ones that we're supposed to invite. Well, here's God inviting them. So this goes back to what I said at the beginning. Why can we invite the poor and the crippled, the blind and the lame? Well, because God is providing for us so we can give to others without being concerned about taking care of ourselves all the time. Well, here in the parable, the invitation goes out to what Pope Francis famously refers to as the peripheries, the leftovers, the neglected, the people who are not important and who can't buy their way into halls of importance or great dinners. People who are dependent. Now, why is it so important to identify these people? Because they're the ones who show us our relationship with God. We can't buy our way into heaven. We don't qualify. We're not among the chosen people. We're not descendants of Abraham in the physical sense. We are on the edges. In fact, we are disqualified by our sins. And yet, the invitation goes to those who have no claim to it. That's us. Well, maybe if you look at the parable more closely, it's still in the Jewish context. That's still the Jews who were not allowed to go to the temple because they had deformities. But then, in the parable, there's still room. There's still room. And the master says, well, I want my home to be filled, so go out and get just anybody. That represents the Gentiles. So in the parable, we got the Jews, the chosen people, we've got the people who would have been excluded or at least forgotten, and then we have the Gentiles who were never thought of in the first place from the Jewish context. But what we see here is God's desire for his home to be filled. God's desire to give. God's desire to make a gift of himself and to share what he has with everybody. In fact, with anybody who's willing to say yes to the invitation. So that's the message there. Applying it to ourselves. We have this great invitation. We have this opportunity. What is our response to it? It's connected, very closely connected, to what we heard about on Sunday when the man asked Jesus what's the greatest or the first of the commandments, and Jesus gave the brilliant answer, the profound answer, well, there's two and they go together. There's love of God and love of neighbor, meaning the highest priority of all is response to God. Response of love for the love of God. And that's why Jesus says, with your whole heart, with your whole mind, with your whole soul, with all your strength, meaning the right way to live is with this wholehearted response to God. And the question is, are we doing that? Do we respond to God that way? Because if not, we're putting something else as a higher priority, either our field, our oxen, or our marriage, meaning some lame excuse. Because by comparison to what our relationship with God means and what God has in mind for us, those things are nothing. Now we can use those three images, the field, the oxen, and the marriage, to represent our business, our money, and our family relationships. all of which very easily become our highest priority. Let's just put work. A lot of people treat work as the most important thing in their life. A lot of people. It's easy to do because it seems to be worthwhile, make money, can impress people, it's satisfying, it can accomplish things. Work is a very easy idol. And in modern times, workaholism and idolatry of work is very common. Money, very common. In this 21st century, some the connection with the social media, either in the games, the videos, the social media, interaction with people, pseudo-friends and all that, that seems to be an idolatry, and that consumes people's lives. And that's the most important thing, especially you see it among young people. That's the most important thing in their life. Okay, so... But if it's, whatever it is, whatever other than God is the most important thing in your life, you're doing it wrong. It's a misplaced priority. It's a wrong order. And what happens when we choose something else other than God as our first priority, as our reason for being and doing what we do? What happens is, we saw this in the case of the rich young man, what happens is we end up sad. We end up sad. We might have what we chose, still got that field, and now I'm gonna look at my field. We can walk around that field all day long, it's not gonna satisfy you. You can work all day, you can work 80 hours a week if you want to, it's not going to satisfy. You're going to end up sad. If God isn't first, you'll end up sad. Okay, that I think is a way of understanding this parable. The first reading is the famous hymn. It's usually, the scholars usually call it the hymn on the kenosis. Kenosis, the Greek word for being poured out or being emptied. Because this is the description of Jesus. What does Jesus do? Well, he empties himself. He's God. It says he's in the form of God. It's kind of a weird way of saying it, but He's, without explaining the Trinity, Jesus is in full ownership of the divine identity. And he doesn't regard that as something to be grasped. This is the whole thing, isn't it? But once we start grasping, well, then we end up sad. Because the very thing we're holding on to, which is what we're supposed to give, we can't give because we're grasping it. So he doesn't grasp, but he empties himself. That's the kenosis. He empties himself. He does what seems so unnatural to us. He makes a gift of himself. It's not unnatural. It's our fallen nature that makes it seem unnatural. It's our fear that makes it seem unnatural, or our idea that we have to take care of ourselves, we have to grasp ourselves. No, we don't. We don't have to. We can go out, we can invite the poor, the blind, the lame, the crippled. You don't have to worry about taking care of yourself. You can make a gift of yourself, and Jesus is the model. All the way down to human level, from divine level to human level is already a great condescension. Then even further to the form of a slave, even further to death. Even further, death on a cross. It couldn't go any further. There isn't any more to pour out, every last drop of blood. And what is the effect of that? We would say, well, that's the end of that. That's the end. That you're a loser if you have nothing left. No, exactly the opposite. Because you're making a complete gift of yourself, as Jesus does, now you can be filled with what God has in mind for you. This is the thrilling adventure of the life of faith. That if we don't grasp, if we do give, if we do empty ourselves, if we do love, well then we have suddenly this capacity way beyond what we can imagine, a capacity to receive. And that's, of course, Jesus, He receives the name above every other name. he receives the highest honor. Honor in heaven, on earth, under the earth. He's Lord. He's Lord, sharing in the glory of the Father. This is the path of love. When we take the risk of letting go of ourselves, of giving ourselves, of not protecting ourselves all the time, we enter into this divine dynamic, and it's a beautiful one. So that's the invitation. It's an invitation that we have already received, but it's an invitation that also is given to us every day. Now the banquet is ready. We heard it in advance, you could say, like the invitation in the gospel, that we invited everybody. But when the banquet is ready, now is the time, and this is the experience of our daily life. Sometime today, we're going to have an opportunity to love. Sometime today. I mean, many, many times, but we won't be aware of it most of the time. But at some point, we're going to have a chance to make a sacrifice or forget our plan or let go of what we wanted to do in order to put someone else first. Grab the opportunity. Grab it. Don't grab your field or your oxen or your marriage. Grab the opportunity to love and let this divine process take over.